Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is your host, Mark Jewell, and I am joined today by Scott Sanders, who's the GM up at Peterson Farms Seeds up in North Dakota. Man, welcome to the call.
Hey, thank you. It's actually above freezing today, so it's a rare day in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interestingly weird winter that you really guys have had this year. So
I'm not even sure we'd call it winter. I think we went right from fall into spring again. So it's definitely different for us.
I just received, so as we record this, it's the 4th of March. So this will come out somewhere in April or May, but in April and May, that's where I grew up in central Minnesota, where we get ready for the leech season, being in the fishing bait industry growing up.
That's right.
And my sister sent me a picture yesterday of on March 3rd, putting leech traps in central Minnesota.
Wow.
Full 60.
Is that a record?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, full 60 sure. days ahead. Usually it's like maybe earliest would be last week of April.
Yeah.
You know, often it's first week of May whenever the ice gets melted enough where you can start putting traps in the water. So
it's crazy.
Pretty wild to see. So it'll be also interesting to see what are the downstream effects for everybody.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Oh, for sure. In the ag industry, we get real nervous when the weather's too nice up here in the spring. Because that might push some guys to get out to the fields. And I mean, it's not abnormal to see snowstorms in May up here. So we get a little nervous around this time of year, hoping guys just let patience rule the day.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it'll be, and it, well, I was at Commodity Classic last week, and there was some guys that were a little from up that way that were a little nervous due to the lack of moisture and all the different things. So it's always sort of a you just never know kind of a situation with this.
That
industry.
Is absolutely true. Yep.
Well, Scott, I like to kick it off with the same question every time. Tell me what does it mean for you to be intentional?
You know, that's a question that I've certainly focused on, I think, the past 12 months. But for me, it means beginning with the end in mind. Right. It's taking a step forward, but knowing which direction you're going to take and why. And that can be something as simple as beginning with the end of your day in mind. What are you trying to accomplish to, you know, a 5 to 10 year plan, a strategic plan for your business? You really, in order to be intentional, you have to know where you're going, and to know where you're going, you really have to think through what the end looks like for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fine answer. It's a fine answer. I think it's so important. One of the things I talk about, I think maybe I mentioned this in just about every episode, but is how challenging it is to pull that off.
You know? Yeah, it's a really easy thing to say, like a lot of things in life, but no, it's very tough because you do have to take the time to think through things. It can get really easy, as most of the folks listening to this podcast can understand. You get really busy with the day-to-day task and grind of the job. And I think... Mm-hmm. To be in a position to where you really have to pull yourself back and think, it's not just for yourself. It's really for everybody else who's not taking the time to do that and making sure you're looking out ahead of that bow of the boat. So you kind of, you know, what obstacles might be in front of you and maybe more importantly, what opportunities might be there to grab. It's really important in a leadership position to be able to take time to think ahead.
Yeah. How do you get time to think? Do you get time to think?
not as much as I would like, if I'm being honest, right? As you know, and the others probably don't, but I got married late in life. I just had a new baby with my wife, 5 weeks old.
That's right. Congratulations on that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Thank you. Excited, but at the same time, that just added a couple more things to my life that I have to think through in a good way. I love the distractions, but yeah, your time is no longer your own. And I think a lot of CEOs and general managers and presidents, what have you, feel that way. You've got a number of employees that you're thinking about. Things can get filtered up to you pretty quickly. And I think it's It's just tough to find that time. So I think you have to be intentional about your mornings. And that's what I'm learning with you is how do I set aside some time in the morning that's just for me, that's quiet, that allows me to think about whatever's going to enter into my mind at that point. And then I think it's important too, maybe at the end of the day, I think you do have to set aside time every day. That's the part that I find difficult. You just get going with your schedule and you just start going one thing after another. And I think you do forget to make sure that you're creating capacity for yourself. And what I mean by that is you are thinking about the rest of your day. You're thinking about your week. You're thinking about who you have to get things done for. Because as a father, as a husband, a brother, a son, I mean, all those things, there's just lots of people pulling at you. And you don't want to fail for any of them. So taking the time to think through that is, quite honestly, it's a critical step in that process of being intentional.
I often just wish that I could work with everybody one-on-one and help to curate that experience within which they really get how important sitting down and being intentional with thought and procuring time in the calendar. It's almost like a cadence of self-coaching. Right.
Yeah,
Just
for
that
sure.
I've heard leaders just talk about the idea of just sitting and looking out the window. And there's an important aspect of just sitting and looking out the window sometimes,
Absolutely. Letting your mind go where it goes. Yeah, absolutely.
this morning I was feeling off as I drove my kids to school. And so on the way back, like normally I'll listen to a business podcast. That's my strategy time. I listen to, here's how to structure your business. Here's how to win. Here's how to invest and all those things. 'Cause my mind is in that mode at 7:30 in the morning when I'm driving kids around. And
Right.
on the way back, I was like, I don't know. I just need to be quiet right now. Like that was where I was at. I just need to be quiet. I've been running hard for the last 2 months. We just came off a Commodity Classic. We've got 1 week to prep and then we go into 3 more weeks of travel.
That's right.
Like
That's right.
I just need to be quiet, for a minute and
Well,
think.
yeah, I think that a lot of folks, I think it's selfish, right? We're taught to think of others first and to put your team ahead of you, and that's all great. But if you're not creating time for yourself, I think eventually that catches up with you, and then you're not the type of person, leader, brother, husband, whatever, that you could be. So while it may feel selfish, I really have worked hard at actually working with you and trying to change that mindset. That I sort of got to put my oxygen mask on first before I can help others. I call it the oxygen mask rule, which helps me not to feel so selfish. Because you have a tendency to feel like, oh, how can I make time to go work out, or how can I make time to just go sit and stare out a window when I've got all these people who need everything? But it's really important. Your point
Exactly.
is well taken.
I mean, we talk about it's okay to be a little selfish in order to be more selfless, right? Like I
That's
gotta
right.
put it's like the whatever the oxygen mask rule. I gotta put gas in the tank or my truck's not gonna go. But we get busy. We get into the mode of doing things, and we don't treat ourselves well often,
It's very true.
right? So people need to be more intentional for themselves in order to be able to help others in our Thriving Leader program that you've been through. We talk about this as the law of infusion. I can only infuse others to the degree that I first infuse myself.
That's right.
And people will look at that and say, oh, that's a cool model. That makes sense. I definitely understand. And then they go home and they go right back to the same old grind.
Oh, for sure. For
Making no
sure.
change whatsoever, which I know you've experienced too, right? It's been tough
I
to
have.
implement.
I
It's
have.
tough to implement because our world is not necessarily the world that we have built for ourselves doesn't necessarily reflect what intentional leadership actually looks like.
Correct. I mean, it happens every time you go to a conference, right? You go sit through some general sessions or some breakouts and you write down these great ideas and you feel energized. And by the time the wheels of the plane land and you get back home, you've forgot about that note, or you've left it in the book that you wrote it in, and you move on with your day. But if you actually sat down and tried to think through some of those things, you can actually put some plans into action versus just having a nice few days at a conference and then going about your day as usual.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's talk about how that all this parlays into your business. You're running a pretty nice little business up there in North Dakota at Peterson Farms Seed, and yeah, just tell us a little bit about the business. I want to talk
Sure.
about talent attraction and retention and what that's like in your part of the world up there. But yeah, give us a little background.
Yeah, you bet. Peterson Farm Seed has been around 28, 29 years now. Carl and Julie Peterson started it in the late 90s, sort of accidentally got into the seed business. But thankfully, for about 65 employees now, we sell corn, soybeans, wheat, and some other products in the three states of Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota, with North Dakota being our home state and really our biggest sales territory. The other thing I loved about Carl when I met him is he's very much a do the right thing kind of guy. I also call him a crazy wild-haired scientist. He's got an idea for every hour of the day. And 8, 9 out of those out of 10, probably doesn't work out. But everybody knows that if you're going to try crazy things, eventually one's gonna hit. And he's not afraid to do that as an owner. So it's been a lot of fun working with this company and getting to sort of feel that culture of innovation. We can move faster than a lot of our big major competitors that are out there. We certainly don't have the pocketbooks of some of those companies, but I've got 65 people, and I don't know that I can say that one is more important than the other. And I think when you have a company like that, it's really easy to come to work and kind of put the bootstraps on and really get to it, because you've got 64 other teammates who feel pretty strongly about the business, and we're sort of the underdog in this part of the world. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I
What
think
so
that's
I'm
enough.
curious with that. So this is a really interesting question I haven't been able to ask anybody else yet. So what is it like coming in as the GM under the founder of the business and transitioning that and leading that?
How did I know you were going to ask that question? Anybody
You know, I'm
who's who.
curious.
Yeah, anybody who's in that position knows that it's a challenge, right? It can be a challenge even if you have the most well-meaning of owner above you, right? The entire company looks to that owner. They're the face of the company. They're the ones that everybody turns to when there's a problem. And so to come in as a general manager and try to take over some of those, yeah, it's very tough. And I would say I've got about an easier road as maybe possible with an owner. Carl's very smart. He knew that he needed a general manager. The company had grown to a size where he could no longer keep his arms around everything. So I certainly have that support from he and his wife, Julie, who are both co-owners and founders of the company. But the challenging part is not the day-to-day, is not the technical aspects of the job. It's really the soft parts, if you will, of your job, the emotional side, the ego side of the world. It's how much do you want to put your mark on the company and do things the way that you think they should be done, versus a guy who's been doing it 20 years prior to you, and that's the only way the company has known it. So there's certainly a challenge there, but I think that if I've been successful in one thing, I think over the course of the last 25 years, it's I've learned from some really wise people. And I learned from an early age to listen to your elders. And I say that now. I think I'm becoming one of the elders a little bit. I don't want to admit that, but I don't think we as a culture in general listen enough from those that have been there before us, right? Just because you're listening and learning and not talking doesn't mean you can't learn something. It doesn't mean you have to do it like they do it, but you might understand the why behind the decisions they made. And I think that's been an important relationship for Carl and I. He knows that I have the freedom to make decisions. But I also spent my first, I've been in here 8 years now. I probably spent my first 5 or 6 years listening and understanding why do they do things the way they do. Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What can I add as far as in terms of new ideas or different ways to do things? But you don't know where you add value until you understand the current process and the current way of doing things. So, yeah, it's a challenge day to day. And I think if Carl was sitting here instead of me, he'd probably tell you it's just as challenging from his end. How do you let that go? That this is his baby. This is what he and his wife do every day. They live 30 yards away from my office. So there's no getting away from them. But I think it's just a respect and I think a patience level you have for the people around you. I just think you have to have that. And if you don't, there's more problems than just trying to be a GM underneath an owner. I think you've got major problems if listening and patience aren't a part of your lexicon.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good insight. And I'm sort of selfishly asking because I'm, we're about to go through that in our business because I'm looking
Sure.
for that GM to come in, or we call it integrator around here, that person who can, take off the day-to-day management of most of the functions of the business so that I can get out and go speak and make podcasts and sell things and do what is, what's in my calling to go do, which are those things, right? And then and build team and make sure that we build culture. We have a very intentional, very robust vision for what this thing gets to look like over the long run. And it's really exciting. And I also know the longer I sit in the seat where I'm like having to go and look at, hey, are the workbooks ready for the next event?
Right. The
You
tactical stuff.
know,
Yep,
like
exactly. The
the
details.
tactical stuff, like
Yeah.
no, that stuff has to get handled, and we're just breaking out. We were at that point once before COVID, and then we went backwards, and now we're back to that point again where we're bumping up
Sure.
on the ceiling of where we were in 2018, 2019 before things slowed down, right? And being in the event space, we have a lot of logistics, just a lot of details and the hotel bookings and the food. And
For
so
sure.
on next week I'll be in Kansas City. We'll do a one day training event, and then the next day in between podcast interviews for the show, I got to go do hotel tours, to go for our next public event, which is going to be in Kansas City. Like somebody's got to go look at it, and we're there, so I might as well. But at the same rate, those are some of the things that I want to get off my plate, because that's not making us money. That's not helping us impact more people. That's not getting more downloads for the podcast. It's not getting more stages to speak on and things like that, right?
One thing I would have for advice from you, Mark, only because I'm on the other side of what you'd be going through, right? One thing that I really appreciated about Carl was he on day, I think actually day minus one. A Monday was I was going to become the GM. And on Friday, as I was leaving, I asked him, I said, Carl, if I forget everything, what are the things that matter most to you that I have to keep in mind? Right. And he thankfully he had one, although I've since learned there are more than one, but he said one, and it was always do the right thing. I don't care about what we've done in the past. I don't care what the rules say, not the laws. We certainly follow the laws, but do what you think is right, and you'll never get off the same page with me. And that was incredibly freeing, right? Because we're two different people, and whoever you have as your GM is going to be a different person with different opinions and thoughts and strategies. But I think it's important for you to clearly roadmap out the big rocks. If you put it in terms of the EOS traction model, what are your big rocks? What are the things that have to be there? And as much as you can, learn to be okay with the sand and the little rocks that, certainly probably create the most friction. But if you give that person a little freedom to operate and he or she knows what their boundaries are, I think you're going to find somebody that grows faster and probably comes to you more often voluntarily, because they know the big things. They just want to kind of figure out how to maneuver within the big rocks, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this and our coaching programs, and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. Good stuff, man. Well, so I just want to dive into a couple of those big rocks around the business. Obviously, people are going to be huge. You mentioned you got about 65 in the headcount over there. So what's important to you guys around talent acquisition and retention these days? How's that been going, and what's working for you?
Yeah, you know, I probably have a unique perspective on retaining talent. I actually, though I'm sure you know this, but I was a headhunter out of Minneapolis for like 6 years, which was just through a friend of mine that I had at Ernst & Young who had started a company. So I sort of took a detour, and at the time was looking to get away from the travel that I was doing. So didn't even realize the benefits of what I was doing at the time. But I learned so much about retaining talent and what I think matters to employees. Now, that was 10, 12 years ago. Things have certainly changed with COVID and working remote and the new generations of employees that come. But I think first and foremost, I think it's important to stay in touch with the younger people. That's the talent a lot of times that you're bringing in more frequently. Yes, you can hire other executives and managers, and that's a big deal. But I think it's building from the bottom up in terms of what is important to the employees that are in college today. It's very different than it was when I was in college. It's very different than it was when my dad was in college. I think today, a lot of the younger folks that are out there just want to be recognized and have a satisfying type of a job, meaning they're listened to, they matter, they're heard from. It's less about the paycheck. They might not admit that, but it's really how to find and retain talent. To me, it's about having a culture that you can talk to them about. And then when they come in the business, allowing them to see that culture and have that verified. And culture thing is, I hate the word culture, right? Everybody uses it. Everybody talks about it. Mm-hmm. Culture to me is really just how you operate and how you communicate with people. I think people today are exposed to a lot more information than you and I had when we were that age. I think they're more aware of the things around them. The perspective on global things is larger than ours were. So I think they're a little smarter from a what's going on kind of thing. And I think they just want to be told the truth. I think they just want to feel like they're a part of something, like they have a role. So that, to me, that's the biggest thing about attracting and retaining the talent is doing what you say you're going to do. That say-do ratio that my dad used to tell me has to be 1-to-1. And if it's any less, people are going to look at you a little differently and they might not trust everything you say. And I think that's a big deal. I think young people are smart. I think they can tell when you're filling them full of BS. So I think doing what you say, I think they're going to stick around. And then a big thing that is cost free, right? It doesn't cost my business anything if we're flexible with our people. Now I grew up in an era where there was no such thing as working from home. I don't really like to work from home, and my job today, I really can't work from home because a lot of what I do is face to face. It's conversations with people. It's directing traffic. It's making decisions. But a lot of the roles that we have, and we found out during COVID, people can work from home. Now, I personally don't think it's great for the culture if you have that as the main crux of your employees. Everybody's gone and remote. But I think if you have a talented person who's earned some equity in the company, right, or they're very well respected, they do a great job, they're a great teammate, why can't they work from home one day a week if it helps their situation at home? I'm not saying to do that just because, but I think remembering that priorities are important to people, their families and their personal life always come first. And if you can be flexible with that and still get out of them what you need and that relationship is strong, I think that's what people are looking for. I don't think they're looking for a nice fancy gym or a nice, you know, a Starbucks in the bottom of your building. I don't think they care.
Yeah.
I think they're looking for things that are a little more contextual than that.
I love how you've woven all of this together and really made that make sense for us. I want to pick out a couple of things, you know, that you've said in here. Really one, this last little bit, which is, you know, there's a lot of debate and conversation around the at home. Can we let people work at home? It really just depend on the nature of the business. My business has always been virtual since before it was cool. Mm-hmm. And so I've never had the overhead of an office outside of maybe a co-working space that I go to when the sure. house is going to be noisy and I just need somewhere else to go think or go work. Mm-hmm. But I would invest, you know, when we had a lot of people full-time, about half a dozen people full-time, not a lot, but that was a big number for us to be carrying in our little business back in 2019. So once a quarter, I would fly everybody in.
Sure.
right? Like figure out, okay, well, the cost of us having an office would probably be about $3,500 a month for everybody to have enough space for what we needed to do, right? So $3,500 a month, run that across the course of the year, right? There's about 40 grand in there. And so I'm not even spending 40 grand, but I mean, shoot, I mean, with a few, you know, six plane tickets and and some hotels once every 90 days, it doesn't even come close to that. But it brings everybody together inside of our culture.
For sure.
You know, like inside
For
of the
sure.
way we, it's what we, our culture is heavy on like thriving and not surviving. So we get up, we go to a kickboxing workout together, we go do, you know, and then we would get together and you know, sit down, get the flip charts out and start working on projects. And everybody reports on their things. We spend a day and a half doing that, have a dinner, and everybody goes home, you know, and we would just get that cadence. And that's what people are really struggling. They're not, I think one of the reasons that people are struggling so much with this, you know, work from home, not work from home, got to be in the office, got to be whatever is, and this is just my recommendation, just decide who you are.
Exactly.
Just decide who you're gonna be. And I decided that a long time ago. I said, a small business like mine, I can find way better talent if I'm not restricted to my geography. And so I'm going to go that direction. Now, in my new role for my GM, I kind of want somebody who's in my geography because of where we're at
Sure.
in the stage of the business and where I'm at in the stage of life. Man, I think we could go faster if I'm getting together with my GM and maybe my sales guy once a week or once every other week in person for a day or two. And we're
Yeah.
throwing some stuff on a whiteboard and working on goals together. I kind of think that's going to be fun. And so I'm looking maybe a little bit more geographically close in this particular case for that role. For everything else, we're looking for five coaches right now. They can be anywhere in the country and Canada.
Right.
You
Well,
know?
I think you nailed it. That's the key to making that work, right? You have to know who you are. You
Yeah.
have to be flexible, right? There isn't a one size that fits all. I think a lot of
Exactly.
people figured out during COVID that they operated just fine remotely, and maybe they had happier employees. I also think they found out the opposite. I think they found out that some folks, even though they complain about it, they missed something about that culture at the office of seeing people, interacting with people on a face-to-face basis. You know, it's not the same. If I was getting a cup of coffee and I might walk down the hall and see my AP person and just kind of, hey, how was your day? You know, what's going on with you? I'm not going to pick up my computer and go dial into a video call to get her on the phone and say, hey, how's your day? Those are the things that make it more difficult to do because we've got other things going on. So I think you nailed it. It's being flexible and knowing exactly what you need to get out of it.
Yeah, it just does. Hey, this is we're going to be this kind. I was met with a leader here last fall who just said, you know what, we're an office culture. We're like in our business, we're an office space culture. And you know, and that flies in the face of so much of what's going on right now. And like you got people saying, hey, I'm not gonna, you're gonna make me go to an office, I'm not gonna come to work for you. And you know what he says? Fine.
Fine.
I'll find somebody who
Exactly.
does want to work in my office.
That's right.
And you
That's
know what he
right.
did? He spent a bunch of money and created an incredible workspace that is the most intentional corporate workspace that I've ever seen. So I don't have to go to an office. I don't even work for the guy. He's also not even a customer. But guess what? I call him up. I'm like, hey, I got a customer in town. I need somewhere to bring him. Can I bring him to you?
Sure.
Right? Can I come and just like use some of your office
Yeah.
space? He's like, sure. I'm like, hey, I need a place to go work today. Is it okay? He's like, yeah, just come on in. Like, we're not doing business together, but I'm working at his office because it's awesome. And he's created
Yeah.
a space within which like people can come and want to work.
So what
Right.
makes it
So,
so awesome? Why
well,
do you
yeah, I
like
mean,
it so
he's just done
much?
some things like as you go through the way, like the layout and like what would be the office
Sure.
component, there's some that's like really nice open, conference rooms, you know, where some of the like the open air kind of workspaces are,
Yeah.
those are cool. But I'll give you an example. So in the boardroom of this place, there's intentionally designed, I mean, like a bench seat, just like a padded bench seat in the back of the room where if people want to get up and like still be engaged in the meeting, but not be sitting at the chairs around the table is cool. They intentionally created width outside of the table so that if people want to roll back or they want to stand up,
Sure.
and like, you know, because you're sometimes you're in there for long meetings and they want to be able to stand up, they can stand in the conference room
Sure.
without hovering over the people around the table.
Yeah, that's
So,
nice.
right? I mean, all we did is we created a wider room and we put a bench in the back. that looks comfortable to go sit on. And so it just creates a space where now we can have long, you know, debates and discussions and work on projects together without feeling so cramped.
Right.
That would be one example, right?
Perfect. And it's well thought out.
Yeah. And then in there, they have something called the war room. And in the war room, you go in, you have like, it's a multi-tiered, like almost like stadium seating, and somebody can stand down in the front and do like video conferencing, but then they can put stuff up on the screen. It's an intimidating room to walk into. And they have done this specifically because they will bring competitors in or other people in to have these, you know, these meetings with, and it's done to be intimidating.
Not to meet the CEO. He sounds like a guy it'd be fun to meet.
But it looks cool the way they've designed it, right? I mean, it's very functional. So those would be just a couple of simple examples. But you walk down to the coffee station and they've got, they've branded their little coffee stir sticks. Go down to the main level. You go to the, there's an open like sort of bar area, kitchen. They can entertain customers inside or outside.
Awesome.
Huge outdoor kitchen. There's a walking trail that's a like a quarter mile around. So you do four laps around the building, and you can walk in nature, which is kind of neat. But then, I mean, they have a full gym in the basement, which you know I like.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
A sauna, a hyperbaric oxygen treatment chamber.
Are they hiring by chance?
Yeah. You know, like I said, I go there because why wouldn't I? Right. So, I mean, you go into the kitchen and, you know, so, I mean, you know that I'm about healthy eating and lifestyle, and, and a thriving leader thrives from the inside out first. And so, I mean, you go into their kitchen and they actually have, I mean, smoothies inside, like just for people that want, you know, that want to make a quick protein shake, you know, and like almond milk or dairy or whatever. I mean, all the different things that you can mix in there, protein, extra protein powder if you need it. There are six Trek mountain bikes if you want to just take one and go for a bike ride.
I'm starting to feel like the world's worst GM right now.
don't share this with anybody at Peter's.
Yeah, right.
He's going to start asking for more stuff. Yeah. But as you know, I want to bring it back to the point, which is that CEO, that owner decided we're going to be a space that brings our people in, our warriors come and work together in this space. And this is where we go. Now they have field staff all over the country too. So not everybody's in the office, but their main office staff, right, is right here. And he's curated a place, and the people, I walk around the place and I talk to the people. They're really proud of what of what they have. Like the people are pretty jacked up about being there.
I should hope so. Sounds great.
So sometime when you're down here, I'll take you out there and show you the space. Yeah. But I think that, so that's really intentional. And the whole point of this podcast, right? The intentional agribusiness leader is to be intentional, right? Yeah. And that's where, so in that case, you said one other thing. This was interesting because I wanted to touch back on that before I went off on my whole rabbit trail about this office space. So staying in touch with what younger people are looking for, have a culture that you can talk about. That's interesting. That was just an interesting statement, right? But then a culture that they can also verify. Because this is, if you start saying, oh, we've got a great culture inside this workplace, we do this and this, right? And that sounds good. And they often are not going to think to ask more critical questions because they're not far enough along in their career to say, you know, the trust, but verify. There may be a healthy level of skepticism there. And then I get in there and really like your community culture is that, you know, like everybody gets together on Friday afternoons or Friday at lunch in the cafeteria for pizzas and that's it.
Exactly.
I mean, it becomes kind of a lunchbox letdown, and that's obviously what we want to avoid. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of memes out there these days. If you scroll down Instagram or TikTok about, hey, we want to talk about our award winning culture, and then it's a split screen and they see nothing but pizza boxes over on the right, and everybody's like, okay, great, pizza. We've had that conversation here with a couple of my leadership team members. Culture is not throwing your folks a pizza party. Like that's just not it. I think having an intentional culture, one that you can talk about and you can actually verify, is how you treat every team member. Not everybody's going to get along. Not everybody's idea counts the same all the time. And that's the reality. But hearing people, getting together to talk about problems and then actually listening to the people that have the problems and telling them you're going to figure this thing out and then actually follow through and figure it out. That to me is the culture I'm talking about. It's not the pizza party. It's not the, whatever you want to call it. To me, it's we care about each other. Well, as Carl said long ago to me, just do the right thing and have some fun doing it. And then finally, keep your priorities straight. You got to have your family and your personal life have to come first. And I know that's not a super popular thing to say. I know people, you're supposed to bleed for your company, but I mean, the fact of the matter is if my son or my daughter or my wife need me, I'm going there to do what they need to do. And so actually living that with your people. And when somebody comes to you and they say, hey, my son has a T-ball game at 4 o'clock, I'd really like to get out there and see him. Following through, get out there, go do it. There's nothing we're doing that's so important that that should take precedent. So I think that's what I mean by when I say verifying that that's true. We don't talk about our culture in terms of, hey, we got 4 or 5 holiday parties and we're going to do pizza. We have a Mario Kart tournament every year that I love come February because nobody can believe a guy my age is good at Mario Kart. But what they forget is that came out when I was at the age of playing games, you
Yeah,
know?
that was our generation.
Yeah, so it's super fun and I love that stuff, but maybe we don't do that next year because we got busy. I don't want somebody coming and saying, "Well, I thought you did stuff like that." It's how you treat people. That to me is treat them like adults, you know.
Well, to go, we talk about a lot of the fun stuff, right? But there's also aspects of the culture are like, how do we set standards? What are the standards? What are the core values of the business? Do people know what they are? I mean, things,
Great.
can they be repeated if we were to go looking throughout the organization? Would it be more than something just listed on the wall, right?
Right.
And
Exactly.
I always think about the, what was the movie that that made about Nike, where they go through
Oh,
the whole
is it just
process?
air?
Yeah, I think it's
Is that
just
what it
air,
was called?
right? Yeah, it's air.
Yep.
And where you that I Shoe Dog has been recommended on the pod several times now, and I need to go actually read the book. But it's yeah, it was we look at how like they knew what it was, like their core values were a part of that business, and that was part of what got them through and became an unlikely hero. And now, I mean, obviously, the history behind Nike. But anyway, it was super interesting to see how well that plays into their culture, how important those core values are. But so there's those things, like what I was looking at, watching going through a training with a coach recently, who he has something called a focus filter. And if you want a meeting with him, you have to turn in a focus filter. If he
Interesting.
has a new idea for you to be deployed, he doesn't bring that to you without a focus filter.
Okay. I like it.
Right. It's like, this is the project. This is why it's important. This is what it means to the business. This is what success looks like in the project, right? And here's the rough timeline that I'm looking to implement this within.
That's excellent. I mean, that puts parameters right around it, and right from the start, there's an expectation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I've got 5 meetings on my calendar today, I've got one of those ready, like before every meeting I walk in. Boom, of course I want to.
I worked for a company that if you were calling a meeting and you showed up without an agenda and or an objective to the meeting and somebody asked for either of those in the meeting is over if you didn't have it. Like it was a very strict part, and it was a more of a military culture. So there was a little more stringency to that, but I think that's excellent, right? You got to make people think about it before they put it in.
But we still get stuff done, right? So
Absolutely. Absolutely.
yeah, there's so many I think Bezos and their culture at Amazon, they would everybody had to print off their all the agendas and all the notes for the meeting ahead of time, and they would sit there for half an hour and just read.
But see, you say what you want about Bezos, and I'm sure I don't know him from the next guy. You hear what you read, right? But I think any employee, right? They're always quote unquote boss watching. And I hate that term, but my dad used to pound that into me when I was a kid. People are always watching the boss. So I think if you're as a leader, you're talking about all these great things and you give great advice and you spend all this time thinking about the right thing to say, but you never shut up in a meeting and listen, I don't think you're really living that culture. And I think people are watching you because so many leaders think that they're supposed to have all the answers and they can just kind of walk into a meeting and tell people how it's going to go. I think that's super short-sighted. I think you're going to miss a lot of creativity and innovation from your people who are very close to the process. And if you're not listening first, again, we got two ears and one mouth, and we should be listening. Our listening to talking ratio should be that. And I think a lot of people miss that. And so if you're going to be a leader and you're going to talk about these things that you do, I think you better show that to the team as much as you possibly can. Because they're watching you. And if they don't see you doing it, your words become very light on credibility. That's for sure.
I agree. And the other, this is going back a couple weeks ago, but we have a no phone policy at our dining room table. Okay. As it pertains to dinner, or at least that's kind of been the thing. Now, during the day, I might go sit down and have lunch and, watch a video on YouTube or take in a training or something like that. But I was sitting there with my daughter over the lunch hour. I think they didn't have school that day. And so I sit there and we're having lunch at the same time. And I pulled out my phone and I'm just watching a little training, evaluating some training, something we're putting together. And I didn't catch it. But before I share the end of the story, let me back this up. One thing that my coach tells me, and my wife has the same coach, so we're accountable to this, is what they see you do sometimes, they will do in excess.
That's
What
right.
they see you do sometimes, they will
A
do in
scary thought.
excess, right? And so to finish the story, my wife is literally standing behind me reciting those exact words. What they see you do. So
She's the best.
my daughter had gotten up from the table while I was on my phone, walked into her bedroom, got her phone, and came and sat down right next to me with her phone.
Whoops.
And I thought, and I heard my wife say that, and I looked over and I was like, oh shit, I did
Yeah,
it.
you've got no excuse at that point. There's no way out.
So I took my phone, I put it away, I turned to her, I said, hey, that's my bad. I set the example, but we're not gonna have phones at the table while we're sitting here eating. Let's just talk.
There
So I
you
asked her to put it away and I, corrected it,
go.
but I had to correct my own behavior because, you gotta think, man. I mean, 20 years down the road when she's running her own house, when she's, she would be 34 in 20 years, I mean, it's, well, if I didn't set a high standard now, that's going to be done in excess
For sure.
with interest.
For sure.
That adds
Absolutely. And
up.
if you're not willing to get corrected by your team, I don't think you have much business correcting your team, you know? I mean, it really goes both ways.
100%, 100%, man.
Awesome.
All right, man,
Awesome.
let's bring this in for a quick landing here. I know we're a little bit
Okay.
over time anyway, but what is the what any from a reading standpoint, listening standpoint, what's getting your attention these days?
I haven't read a book in probably about a month now, at least not one from cover to cover. I read a little bit for fun. But the last one I read that I really liked was the Atomic Habits book. I think it's by James Clear. It's not a new book by any means, but I think it was sort of what got me kickstarted on the intentional thing. Certainly, getting introduced to you is sort of the gasoline in the tank. But I remember a couple of years ago I had heard about that book and read it. And it really is. I mean, if you're intentional about the little 1% things, right, you're going to look back 5 years from now and see a bunch of good decisions and all the progress you made. And it's really hard to be intentional if you're not doing the little stuff. You can't just say, I'm going to be an intentional about, shooting a 72 when I go play golf. But I'm not going to be intentional about practicing. I'm not going to go putt. I'm not going to chip. I'm not going to make sure I have the right equipment. It's kind of stupid. So for me, that book is huge. It's focusing on the little small things every day that you can control will get you to sort of where you need to be. So yeah, big, I like
Beautiful.
that book.
It's a great book. I just heard a story the other day actually about that. It was him being interviewed on a podcast. So he actually took it took him 3 years to write that book.
That's what I heard.
It took him 3 years
Sort of
and
ironic.
it's just super interesting, right? And then but what happened to his speaking career and request for more books and everything on the backside of it. So what I love about it is the level of intention that went into that book, and that's obviously one of the things that have made it so good. And he really struggled to get it off the ground, but then he finally, and it,
Yeah.
what I think the encouragement for many of us is that, you know, maybe you got a big project you're working on now. Maybe it's not writing a book, but it's building a team or trying to launch a product or, you know, get, you know, beat your competition in some way, shape, or form, be more effective at the farm gate, whatever the case may be, right? And you're frustrated, right? It's just taking time. Like you, some of the stuff we've talked about today, like just taking a minute to sit down, to think, to have a regular habit of thinking, right? To be a little bit selfish so that you can be selfless, like you and I talked about today.
That's right.
Those are like, you start to stack up those things, like you're gonna get there, right?
Yeah, it's a big reason why I wanted to join on with you, Mark. I just being intentional is a really nice thing to say. I think it can actually be overlooked by a lot of folks, but it's really hard to get around the very definition of intentional. You're meaning to do something for a reason. And I think if that is sort of at the forefront of your mind every day, I think you're going to be happier with the results of whatever it is that you're looking to do. But just have an idea of why you're doing something and the fact that you're going to go do it, I think is a great way to set up a leadership group.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my great hopes with this, the work that we do at Thrive Today, the work that we're doing through the podcast, is I would literally want to up level leadership in agribusiness forever.
Yeah, it needs it.
That's one of the
It
big
needs it.
hairy goals that gets me up to get on and do. And this is probably the 65th interview that we've done for this podcast already, you know, and that's a lot of hours,
Yeah, right. I
you know, to
bet.
sit here and
I
do this,
bet.
but that's the hope. That's the, I mean, that's one of the hopes. So, all right. One of
Good
the,
stuff.
what thoughts do you have? What wisdom can you share as we bring this thing in for a landing, Scott? Any last thoughts or statements as we close out?
You know, just what we started with, Mark. I don't have any big words of wisdom simply because I don't think I'm old enough to be real wise yet. Or at least I don't want to think so. But I think make time for yourself, right? Figure out the things that are important for you, and really make time for yourself. And you said it best. Being selfish is the only way you can get to a point of being selfless. Because if you're not taken care of inside and what's going on with you, you are not going to be as good of a person that you can be for the people around you. And it can sound cliched, it can sound corny, but it's so true. My wife tells me all the time, you know, and her phrase is, "Hey, would you love my husband a little bit more?" It's just her way of saying, "Would you just be nicer to yourself? Take some time for yourself, get away." I think that's really important. So, yeah, if I had any one piece that I've taken from you, that I'm trying to give to everybody that I'm around is yeah, take some time for yourself. It's not selfish. It's actually quite the opposite if you look at it the right way.
Roger that, man. Awesome. Great thoughts. Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.